Greetings. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 27 of the Legacy Drawing Board, the podcast journey and experience that wants you to build a stronger, more meaningful legacy by embracing good design principles. I'm your host, Ron Fong. This podcast is based on three pillars. The first, the purpose. To meet the perpetual need for leadership calls us to edify each other by building enduring relationships. The second, the mission. To introduce you into the world design and have you see yourself as an artist. And finally, the vision, to increase the number of storytellers in the world and to increase the resonance of each story. For those of you who've been following the podcast, I thank you for your support. More importantly, I want to hear about your stories. My email is rfong@truenorthshepherding.com. As you've been listening to these episodes, have you been able to discover your purpose, or at least refine your purpose? Have you been able to make a stronger commitment to your mission? Or have you been able to clarify your vision? Please send me your comments, your thoughts, your critiques. I want to hear how you're progressing as an emerging artist, as an emerging storyteller. Today's episode, I'm going to discuss the importance of distribution as it relates to your legacy. And for this one, I'll make a little bit of esoteric reference, so please have patience and stay with me. It begins with the comic book world. And again, please stay with me. Please bear with me on this. It'll make sense at the end, I promise. In the early 1960s, Marvel Comics came into prominence. But it was still second in sales to DC Comics. And there was a clear divide in the comic book world. DC had the established heroes such as Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And these were kind of more everyday stories and involved everyday people. It wasn't so much nitty-gritty stuff. It was actually a lot of good deeds. Superman is often referred to as a Boy Scout. Marvel came in 1961 with the Fantastic Four and introduced new elements. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, and a host of other creators introduced quote-unquote realism into comic books. Their first entry was the Fantastic Four. And what Stan and Lee did and Jack Kirby did was that they did away with superhero double identities. The world came to know the Fantastic Four as who they were. They were, you know, their identities were out there. They weren't wearing masks. So that was revolutionary. Their other entry into the comic book world that changed dynamics was Spider-Man. And as Stan Lee recounted, he made Spider-Man a full-fledged teenager in a solo stories. He was not a sidekick like Robin. And he went through all the problems of teenage and adolescence, the uncertainties and all the self-doubts. And that became part of the Spider-Man angst. And that what drew readers to it, that the readers could see a hero with feet of clay and identify. They saw themselves in that. And that was inspirational because they saw that a person who was fallible could still rise up to the occasion and do heroic deeds, then maybe you could do, you know, I could do the same thing. I who am, infallible. Whereas Superman seemed just perfect and, you know, our chances of being born on Krypton are next to impossible. When Stan Lee started doing this and introducing these stories, it really took off. And Marvel had a very strong following. And they were actually better stories. The artwork, the dialogue, the character development were better than the borderline silliness at times over at DC with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman as the big three. However, DC still led in sales in the comic book world. They were outselling Marvel. And one of the reasons was, even though Marvel had a better product, was that DC controlled the distribution channels for comic books. Not only were they a comic book company, but they were a distribution company. And obviously, they weren't going to, they would take on Marvel as a client and help distribute, but not enough so that Marvel could overcome DC's top position. And that's why in the 60s, you had very popular heroes having to share a comic book. Captain America and Iron Man had to share a comic title called Tales to Suspense. Submariner and the Hulk had to share a title called Tales to Astonish. Because Marvel had more characters than books they could distribute it, they had to put two heroes into one book. And that continued for quite some time until the late 60s. And the sales figure says that DC was always the top dog and Marvel was always number two, although the fans preferred Marvel much more than DC. Things changed in the 1970s when finally Marvel was able to get out from under DC's distribution control. They were able to find their own distributor, and once they did, they had an explosion of titles. Captain America finally has own book. Iron Man finally has own book. Submariner has own book, and Hulk has own book. And then from there, Marvel was able to overcome DC in terms of sales leads for comic books. So I want you to think about that. That which one point is that even though you may have a superior product or you may have a great legacy, a great story to tell, if you don't have the adequate distribution channels, it's not going to get out there. So it's important when you start thinking about distribution channels for your legacy and your story. Okay, part two. Many of you probably are not familiar with this individual, James Galton. He was born in 1924 and he passed away in 2017. And I'm reading from his obituary in the Wall Street Journal in 2017. He took over Marvel Comics Group in 1975. He was the chief there. And this is from the Wall Street Journal. The drugstores and newsstands where Marvel sold his comic books were going out of business. Children were gravitating towards science fictions and cartoons. So Mr. Galton decided to double down on marketing to devoted Spider-Man and Hulk fan of all ages. He used comic book stores, a new niche business, and home subscriptions to sell Marvel's monthly superhero tales. The new distribution model became a blueprint for revitalizing the comic book business. All right, I'm going to stop right there. At that time, Marvel did enjoy sales, but comic books were coming out of vogue in the 1970s. People were going to different avenues for entertainment, and perhaps even children weren't reading as much. Mr. Galton, as the chief of Marvel, saw this, and he realized that their current model of distribution, even though they had their own distributor now, was not working. So they were selling to drugstores and newsstands, and that's basically for everyone, right? You're competing for space for other periodicals in those venues. And how many children actually go to a newsstand or a drugstore? You may go to the drugstore of your parents, and occasionally, if you remember, the comic books on that spin rack. And that was a really not a good way of marketing and distributing your product. So he realized there was comic book stores at that time, and it was relatively new, where you had establishments that were dedicated to selling comic books. And it attracted the devoted fans, the diehards, who would form the basis for the popularity of comic books. You could go there and have all the titles there in neatly arranged racks and not just hope to find the last copy of Spider-Man at the drugstore. It was there. There was multiple copies of it. You bumped into people or you came across people who like to talk about comic books, who like to talk about science fiction, who like to talk about writing, who were creative themselves. And it spurred an entire generation of new comic book artists and writers. What Mr. Galton realized was that he had an art form. And many people may scoff at that as a comic book, as is, you know, it has evolved. It's evolved into a graphic novel, and it's been a basis for so many movies. He realized that there was a core audience there, basically his tribe, the tribe of readers for this genre. And he realized that he was, from a distribution standpoint, it was so difficult for them that the current distribution process made it inconvenient for them to go to the drugstore or go to the newsstand. Instead, He had them go to a dedicated place where they could find all what they needed at one place and find people of kindred spirits. And he also had the direct subscription, so it would just come to your house. He made it easier for people to access his product. And now, fast forward. So once that fans were able to find a convenient meeting point, they grew. They grew in numbers, and they grew in influence. For the people who are not involved in comic books, or, you know, something that you didn't grow up with or don't really have much interest in, I think most people now are familiar with the Comic-Con in San Diego. And now it has become Hollywood's red carpet. That's where they're going to roll out films, the blockbusters. And they know that they have to bring their A-list and their A-game to the Comic-Con. Because if they don't have a good showing at the Comic-Con, you know, the fanboy base and so forth will just torch them on the internet, and you have very select influential people, and they could basically torpedo a film before it's even released with bad press. Hollywood now has to cater to that fan base, and it started because the fans were able to come together once that the distribution channels were streamlined to accommodate them. So that's a very important point. You look at the top 10 movies, or, you know, the grossing movies of all time now, and I don't know how many of them, but, you know, there's a fair number of them that are Marvel features, the Avengers, Iron Man, whatnot. And you compare that to DC's entries into movies. Yes, they've rebooted Superman, they rebooted Batman, but it hasn't had the sustained power and the interlocking storytelling of Marvel. You knew each Marvel movie would connect to another Marvel movie, and that's how they would get you in. So they built basically a Marvel universe. Again, that's a distribution channel that you link one film to another for a big event. And once Marvel was able to get out from under the DC-controlled distribution channels, they gained in popularity, they increased their market share, and with Mr. James Galton taking over and now even refining that even more, that they had a direct connection with their fan base. Very important in terms of the success of Marvel as it is now in terms of going from the comic book world to the film world. And Marvel's still the leading company in terms of sales. I think they account for 37% of the total sales in comic books, and I think DC is number two at 26%. The lesson here is that Marvel had started merging, and by the mid-60s, most fans would say that Marvel had established themselves as the better comic book company because they had better characters, better stories, better artwork. However, because of distribution limitations, they weren't able to emerge as the leader until the 1970s when they were able to break their contract or find another distributor that was not DC controlled. And James Galton comes in and realizes, I have a fan base out there, but our current system is making it so hard for them to find us. Let's make it easier. And once you accommodate to the fan base, make it easier, then they feel empowered. They take on their own. They form the Comic-Con conventions. And that just led to this wild success for Marvel over the last two or three decades. All right. So that's a story. Now, in terms of the importance of distribution, let me give you something that perhaps is a little bit less esoteric if you're not a comic book fan. In, 1980s, 1990s, I think, at the time, maybe still 90s, the two leading video distributors were Blockbuster and Hollywood Video. And they had exclusive rights to first-run movies. So after a movie was released, 6 months later, they would have the copies of, at that time, videotapes or the DVDs or CDs. and they would have exclusive rights. They would get first, you know, they would have first dibs on it. And that's why a lot of the independent video stores were getting crushed, because they didn't have access to the, you know, most popular, the newest releases. Now, what comes along? What comes along is Netflix. And similar to the Marvel DC dynamic, Netflix did not have the exclusive rights to the films, or once they were released, that they weren't going to have the first runs to it. So they actually could make an argument that their library was an inferior product to Blockbuster and Hollywood Video. However, what was the key? What was separating Netflix from those two? Their distribution channel. They made it convenient for their audience, their core clients. Instead of you having to go to your local Blockbuster or Hollywood Video and always worry about the late fee and all these craziness, Netflix says they would mail to you in those red envelopes, for those of you who remember it, and they said return it whenever you want. And that was the convenience. And again, it spoke to them, so it facilitated that. And over, you know, now what happens over the course of time, that distribution model, along with other technology in terms of streaming, made Netflix what it is today. And Blockbuster and Hollywood Videos are just distant memories, and they are case studies for business about the importance of distribution. Getting back to your legacy now. You have invested time in your legacy if you've been listening to this podcast. Some of you have relayed to me that you have taken lessons from it. You are now becoming a better storyteller. You're crafting your story. You are getting into the world of design. You're looking through the lens of design. You're seeing yourself as an artist. All the things I talked about at the beginning. You have put in a lot of work into your legacy. And well, you should, because that is your message to people. But like any other product, and I'll use that, that's just a reference. If it sits on the dock, it does no good. You have to get it out to the people. And this is not about self-promotion. This is not about grandstanding. It's about the idea that you have built something for others, and now you have to give the others easy access. A legacy is like your name. It's yours, but it's meant for other people to use. You have built your experience as someone working in a particular vocation. You have gained insight as being a parent. All these things now that you have, this value that you have built up, how do you distribute it? Because you want to impart this because it's important to you. These are your values. And you want to inspire others. You want others to hopefully not make the mistakes that you made. You want others to basically, you know, take the baton and reach even greater, higher heights. That's the legacy. That's the power of the legacy. That's the power of storytelling. And as you're working on that in terms of the crafting, the building, refining, designing, the execution, do not forget how to build and establish a distribution channel. And it's not, again, meant to be this all, you know, shotgun approach where you're just going to just go to everyone. No, you're going to be selective, because design is meant to be intentional. You're going to look for certain, you're going to look at situations, and you're going to ask yourself, all right, here's an opportunity for me to share my legacy, to build my legacy, to share my my experience. Start thinking about distribution channels. Where are you positioning yourself? How do you position yourself at work? How are you positioning yourself at home? How are you positioning yourself in your community, in your house of worship, all these things? That's opportunities for you to be able to share your legacy with others. And that's what a legacy is meant to be. It's a message that you want to share with others. Building a fantastic product, building a fantastic, or coming up with a fantastic idea, All those things are wonderful, but it doesn't stop there. You have to take the next step in terms of distribution. And again, that's going to fall on you because this is your legacy. You're going to want to know the audience, the distribution channels, how it's going to be executed. All that is under design. And as I make references to Dieter Ramsen's 10 Principles of Good Design, principle number 2, good design makes a product useful. Your legacy, as much as you do, as much as you have overcome, as much as you have achieved, does no good if you can't, if it's not useful. It's not for yourself. You're not doing this for yourself. You're doing it for the generation to come. You're doing it for your family members, your children, your colleagues, all these individuals, all these people that come into contact with you. That's your audience. And now you have to be able to make it easily accessible to them. You know, they always talk about when you're before an audience, make it easy for them. Don't make them work. The same principle applies to your legacy. Make it easily accessible to those around you, to those near to you. That way you could impart it to them. I hope that you will now take on this additional responsibility of your legacy, that not only are you designing it, not only are you building it, but now you will distribute it. If you're interested in exploring how to build your legacy through design, I invite you to visit my website and sign up for a complimentary session on how we can work together. The next episode, I'm going to talk about the difference between a journey and a quest and how it relates to your legacy. Until then, please give your legacy the time, the attention, and the distribution channel it deserves. Because when you do, we all benefit.